everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. We have a lot of special days of the Damage Report, pretty much 5 a week. But Wednesdays are always special because they're the big news days for whatever reason. That remains true today. But I want to start off the big news of this Wednesday with the big news that J.R. Jackson is off on vacation right now, replaced totally not at the last moment by the always awesome, loyal, and reliable Brett Ehrlich. Brett,
what's funny is J.R. definitely told you, but I'm certain it was in an email to the entire TYT morning like meeting thing, which you're on. I will also say this.
I don't doubt that he did.
John, I'm not done speaking.
You might be. You might be.
If it was just you involved in the booking, I would blame it on you completely for not remembering this information, for not coordinating this information. The fact that the people who handle you also were taken by surprise, I think it's a higher level thing. Like, I have more confidence in their ability to plan events than you. Now, is that difficult to have more confidence in them than I have in you to plan events? No. For you to suggest events, 100%. John motivates people to do it. But actually, John, what time should I be at your house? Stop. Whenever.
Yes.
If we want food, maybe, but maybe not. I don't know. Whatever.
It's been like over a year since that happened, and you still remember. That's good. Anyway, I'm still thankful that you're here less than a few minutes ago, but still generally thankful. Anyway, JR is having a much needed vacation. I hope that he really enjoys it, although he chose really the wrong day to leave because it's Matt Gaetz Day here on the Damage Report. We don't generally really talk about him, you know, mostly because of his whole personality and face and all that. Also his politics. But we have a pretty good reason to. So we're gonna be getting to that very soon after a bit of domestic political news. So definitely stay tuned for that. Also stay tuned because there is at least, I'd say, a 15% chance. It's going up and down that I might pass out for reasons I don't totally understand about my heart rate right now. So you might get to see me pass out on camera. So don't leave for that reason as well. But if you are here, and you are because you're hearing me ask the question, please hit the like button and share the stream so the people know we're live. And as we go through this hour, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all of that, and we will respond as we go. Also wanted to let you know very exciting news happening today on the network on The Conversation. Dr. Rashad Ritchie, that's all you should need to know, is that it's Dr. Rashad Ritchie, but that's not all you need to know. You also need to know he's talking with Representative Park Cannon about what happened last week when she was arrested. We talked about that on the Damage Report. She was arrested outside of Brian Kemp's office as he was signing that terrible voter suppression bill. She's gonna be doing this exclusive appearance on The Conversation today at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time on tyt.com/live and also on Twitch. That is gonna be an awesome interview, so definitely don't miss it. Anyway, with that, Brett, you ready to do this thing?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
No, you thought you were, we're not because we forgot to do something yesterday. I wanna make sure that we do it. Okay. We've had some really bad news in this country about the pandemic, and a lot of really irresponsible people are telling other people to be even more irresponsible. So we wanna get out in front of this by finding out what you think about the direction that the COVID case count is going to go. It has been rising recently up into the mid 60s. So the question available to you right now at tyt.com/polls/COVID-cases, love the dashes. Anyway, is
everyone, John, let me just help you with this. Just go to tyt.com/polls. You'll see all our polls. And the most recent one is the one John's talking about.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well, I'm just doing that from now on. Okay, tyt.com/polls. Will we pass 100,000 new COVID cases each day? Once again, yes or no? This is basically a pessimism meter, but I'm very curious about what everyone thinks. So we're gonna be revealing the results of that poll near the close of the program. And with that said, Brett, now are you once again ready to do this thing?
Now.
Okay, good, good. I just wanted to make sure. The Biden Infrastructure Week is finally here. It had become like the big political joke, Infrastructure Week. But Biden comes in and a couple of months later, it's actually happening. He's rolling out his plan, although you're gonna wanna take a look at the details because it's not necessarily the plan that we had been expecting. You know, about 8 days ago, we had found out from the New York Times that he was preparing a $3 trillion infrastructure spending plan. Just yesterday, Business Insider reported that they were gonna bump the price tag up to $4 trillion. So, ooh, it's getting bigger with every passing day. Oh, nope, it's here, it's $2 trillion. So I don't know what happened since yesterday, but it's half the size that it once was. It's moving in the exact opposite direction that all of us are during the pandemic. But anyway, it has gotten a bit smaller. And so that's what we have. So we're gonna give you the details. But first of all, Brett, what do you think about the number that they landed on?
It's like watching Bitcoin right now. I don't know. I had a huge FOMO when people were like making billions off of Bitcoin. And I felt bad, so I bought like $100 worth of Bitcoin. And it goes down and then it goes up. And it's doing that while you're watching it. It's like that, except with, you know, instead of seeing if I'll have $102 or $104, it's like, will I be able to drive on American roads or not?
Yes.
What a lot of us are missing is how fun this is. When you're talking about like doubling or halving the size of the investment in America's infrastructure, isn't it fun?
Yeah. It's so fun to think about, like, will there be bridges? Maybe. Will there be half as many bridges as there could be? Tune in to find out over the next decade. Anyways, that's sort of our response. A lot of progressives are not pleased with this. AOC tweeted, this is not nearly enough. The important context here is that it's $2.25 trillion spread out over 10 years. For context, the COVID package was $1.9 trillion for this year alone, with some provisions lasting 2 years, needs to be way bigger. Yes, it is. It is very small in comparison to what we've been doing in regards to the pandemic. And as you'll see, it's talking about a lot of different areas of the American economy and infrastructure and healthcare. So when it's doing all of these different things, for the number to be lower than it was supposed to be literally 24 hours ago, not necessarily a great sign, which is not to say that there aren't good things in it. There are, and we're gonna cover some of the big ones. First of all, it plans to invest about $2 trillion over the next 8 years, which is about 1% of America's GDP per year over that time. So another way to look at it, not that huge. Most of it involves upgrading America's roads, bridges, and public transit, but it also expands long-term care for the elderly through Medicaid, bans exclusion zoning, and invests in community-based violence reduction programs, among many other things. And there are a lot of things. Like $621 billion in infrastructure spending dedicated to rebuilding the nation's roads, bridges, ports, and rail systems. $300 billion to bolster manufacturing. $213 billion for affordable housing. $380 billion for research and development. I guess just in general, I don't know. Modernizing America's electricity grid, installing high-speed broadband around the country. $400 billion for home and community-based health and elder care. Little things that I like to see, like investing $174 billion in the electric vehicle market, including building out a network of 500,000 EV chargers on roads over the next 9 years. That's significant. I have a lot of criticisms, but that's certainly significant. It also notably, and there should be more coverage of this, eliminates all lead pipes and service lines in drinking water systems and puts $56 billion in grants and flexible loans to states, tribes, and territories to upgrade drinking wastewater and stormwater systems. So the idea is we're gonna get rid of the lead in the water, finally, across the country. So that's good, Brett. A lot of good things here. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, exactly what you pointed out proves that we don't have enough information about this, and there will be time to get that information. And in the meantime, progressives are saying it's not enough, right? Which is fine, and like the default position that we should have and should be expected based on experiences with government spending and investment in underserved areas, right? So this is a good position to have. When you say that it fluctuates between when everybody says that it fluctuates between $2 and $4 trillion over the course of a week, just underscores how little information that we have. Maybe the original plan was 8 years and then, or 16 years, $4.9 trillion or $4 trillion, and now it got halved to 8 and 2. We don't know yet. The other thing is, no one knows what anything costs really ever. Okay, so it's weird to me to hear, or at least you need a more developed like invoice with line items and costs if you're gonna criticize it, right? So and we don't have enough information to know if that criticism is valid yet, because right now it's literally press releases from the people who want you to like it. Okay, So sure. There will be time. It must be monitored as it progresses. But in terms of those subject areas and those line items, I like the priorities. I like the priorities being, we got to build roads. We got to build broadband. You know, we have to, in the same way that building the railroads in the Industrial Revolution was very essential for America to develop as a nation economically, even though they did it by terrible, terrible means. We need to lay that fiber now to take us to the next level. And we need to build the roads because we still, you know, even though the cars might not have drivers in them, we need to get stuff from place to place. So I like the priorities and definitely getting the lead out once and for all.
Definitely getting the lead out. That's funny. Yes. So let's turn now to process. We now have at least basic ideas of what the Biden infrastructure plan is supposed to look like. The plan, not the final bill, not even the interim bill. We have that. So let's talk now about what actually happens from here, because when progressives criticize the size of the bill, it's not just that it's not big enough, it's when is it not big enough? And I think that that matters. Possibly Brett will disagree. Nobody disagrees with me more on the show than Brett. It's one thing to have it chipped down to 2 trillion as a result of what is going to be a soul shredding process in the Senate, but that's not what's happening here. They're starting at $2 trillion. Now, could it expand in the process? It's hypothetical. You maybe think of that. And even Joe Manchin had previously said numbers that were higher. But all these, like, we gave details on what's in it. Do we think that there's likely to be more at the end? Maybe. Sometimes there's pork that's put in spending bills. That is possible. My fear is that, like with a lot of the other, like with the COVID stimulus bill, is that it's more likely to shrink than expand once we get into this. And if you're already starting off at a number that many people believe is too small, and it's certainly not, it's not FDR 2.0 like he's been so hyped to consider himself apparently behind closed doors. So Brett, what do you think about that? About what's gonna happen once they actually get into the thick of it?
I love that you say with great optimism, sometimes pork makes its way into the bill. Always pork makes its way into the bill. Frequently, it does end up shrinking the overall size of the bill because it's not just enough to take spending out for massive needed things. In order to whip those votes, you definitely you also need to sweeten the deal by I forget what it was, like classifying refineries in Kentucky with random classifications so they get new tax things for Mitch McConnell back. Anyways, I think that this will be a budgetary bill and probably make its way through the reconciliation process, which narrows which gets rid of a giant hurdle. In the meantime, I think that the Senate will only pick its filibuster battle for HR 1, and depending on the timing of all of this, that will determine whether, I think they're going to do this first and go through reconciliation so they don't have to bother with all that other stuff. I honestly don't know. My guess is, as someone who is native to the Senate, Joe Biden is doing this in the hope that he will win specific votes specific ways. But then again, that's just my gut, which I'm not trusting in this case, because I honestly don't know what their next steps are going to be. Like, I'm certain they will go try to get it through the House in some way that is flashier and bigger, and then it'll get to the Senate, who will rewrite it. And I think they're trying their luck with these, like, Madison Cawthorn. You voted against it and you're bragging about it. You want to do that again, or you want to get behind laying high speed internet so the people who've been stuck at home for a long time, you know, you're not going to win this battle anyway. You might as well be able to say you voted for it afterwards.
Well, and it does notably provide for 100% coverage of rural broadband. That's what they're saying, at least.
Right.
It's possible that in the House they pass something bigger. They've disagreed with Biden's priorities. That is possible. What do you think about Republicans? Because it's generally, I assume going in, any Biden priority or Dem priority, you're going to get 0 Republicans. This being an infrastructure bill, something that they kept at least pretending they wanted to do while Trump was president, and it putting money into a lot of different states, a lot of different congressional districts, But it's still Biden. So do you think it is possible that in the House or the Senate, they will get any Republicans to sign on to this?
Usually, so with these things that typically party identity revolves around. So infrastructure is a Democratic owned concept, the same way like being good on the economy is typically, when you ask voters, traditionally a Republican owned concept. Things mm-hmm. like criminal justice reform is a Democratic owned concept. Things like welfare reform are Republican owned concepts, Republican pitched concepts. With quote welfare reform, you needed a Democrat to get that done, to give those concessions. And with criminal justice reform, you needed a Trump to be like, all right, I'll go along with your thing on my terms. In this situation, they don't need Republicans. So mm-hmm. I think Republicans aren't going to really go along with it. It's not one of those things that they can do on their terms. So I think it's all just BS messaging for election purposes. And when they they'll try what?
Hold on, because this ties back to what you were saying before with Madison Cawthorn. Wouldn't some of them want to say that they had delivered all of this money for bridge renovation in their state or whatever?
Well, we're gonna see how that plays out. It probably, they all look around. It's all about messaging and what they can get away with, right? Usually in these situations, Republicans say, well, the reason I'm against it is this abortion funding thing. That's what I was voting against, to step up for you. Obviously, I was good with the rest, but I wanted to go on record. I'm against abortion stuff. Really, that's not mm-hmm. what, that's what they're doing to placate voters. And behind the scenes, they're going with the Chamber of Commerce and saying like, what helps you, what hurts you? Because I think they're going to the big donors who are saying, this is all going to be accompanied by a tax increase to pay for it. And I don't want that. So they talk out both sides of their mouths, and we'll see how it goes. And we'll see how much Biden explicitly goes for their support. But to his credit, he hasn't really been doing that at all.
Mm-hmm. We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Matt Gaetz is apparently being investigated for a number of crimes that, considering like recent American politics, one would think a lot of people on the right would take very seriously, and they're very much not. But let's give you the details. This is a long and weird and winding story that he has chosen to make as weird as possible. But basically, Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida and a close ally of former President Donald Trump, is being investigated by the DOJ over whether he had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old and paid for her to travel with him. Investigators are examining whether Mr. Gaetz violated federal sex trafficking laws. A variety of federal statutes make it illegal to induce someone under 18 to travel over state lines to engage in sex in exchange for money or something of value, like hotel rooms and things like that. The Justice Department regularly prosecutes such cases, and offenders often receive severe sentences. You can receive 15 years for a charge like that. Now, we don't know a lot. What we do know is that the investigation was opened in the final months of the Trump administration under Attorney General William Barr. Given his national profile, senior Justice Department officials in Washington, including some appointed by Mr. Trump, were notified of the investigation. So you're going to hear a lot about this being a witch hunt and this being a Dem conspiracy theory. Maybe, but it's deep then, because apparently it was Barr set it up. So, or at least okayed it. So, and again, as we give more details, we don't know that he definitely did this or what he definitely or definitely did not do. All we can say is that he is being investigated for these things. So we're going to have more, Brett, but what are your initial thoughts about this?
It depends on if you ask my head or my heart. My head says do exactly what John said. My head says, let's look into the facts. Let's investigate, get to the bottom of this. That's what my head says, and that's my official position. What I'm about to say is not my official position, but rather what my heart is saying. And my heart is saying, oh my God, he totally did it. This guy who's creeping over Tiffy Trump, this guy who's like hanging out with Nestor, even though he's not really related to him and like no longer with mama. I just have to say, like, my heart is picturing Matt Gaetz cruising, you know, whatever Florida streets, looking for, you know, hanging out by the high school liquor store, offering to buy like Boone's Farm for teens. That's what my heart's saying, John. And it's backed up by his criminal record of being kind of the alcohol part, sure. Yeah. And then also just the thing where he's like, yo, my dad will take, you know, my dad expunges stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm Matty Gaetz. My dad will expunge it. I don't care. You guys want, hey, I'm going to buy tamales for everyone. Tamales and tequila shots. Let's do it. Matty Gaetz's house. I don't know if anybody saw the HBO doc where they're like out there and it's like the cesspool, I forget, the swamp in by HBO. And the whole thing, just watch the first 2 minutes of it. You'll know Matt Gaetz. He's exactly like what I just acted out.
I read that he apparently grew up in the Truman Show house. Weird, but apparently true. Anyway, not that it matters. So look, Brett, as I said, we often disagree. I think it's important that we disagree. And I'm going to look for a place to do that in, because the whole head heart thing, 100% there with you. I mean, this isn't CNN, this isn't MSNBC. I don't know what I am or what this career is, but whatever it is, it allows me to say, look at the dude. It doesn't mean he did it. It definitely doesn't mean that he did it. But I mean, look at him and just think about all that you've heard from him. Doesn't seem impossible. That's all I'm saying.
It's just horrifying that like we have a federal age of consent, don't we? It just seems like it is illegal to induce someone under 18 to travel over state lines to engage in sex. That to me sounds like it's a federal law.
Yes, right? It is.
For which he is responsible to draft. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing. His job is to know federal laws and make them.
Oh, we're going to get to his effect on federal laws soon. Don't worry about that.
The act of the QAnon group that he feeds so into. Mm-hmm. And their proclivity for ranting about secret child sex trafficking
by political elites. So Marjorie Greene has put out a statement about this. Remember, she's the QAnon rep. Mm-hmm. What side do you think she comes out on this?
Well, I think she's going to stick to her principles and say, listen, there was child sex trafficking that we've been talking about for years and years. And Matt Gaetz, he seems like the shoe fits. She's going to go against Matt Gaetz because she has integrity.
No, she said it's a witch hunt and you can't trust anything the media says. So anyway, remember, she really cares. Like I've always said, they really, really care about purely hypothetical pedophilia. Real pedophilia, they don't care to give a damn about. But purely hypothetical pedophilia, they're not big fans of. Anyway, the last bit of information that we really have about this investigation is that it apparently is part of a broader investigation into a political ally of Mr. Gaetz called Joel Greenberg, who was indicted last summer on an array of charges, including sex trafficking of a child and financially supporting people in exchange for sex, at least one of whom was an underage girl. He's been seen photographed with this individual and things like that. Again, that doesn't prove that he did anything, but as part of the investigation, at least one local politician has already been shown to have done this. So, the news gets crazy sometimes. The news yesterday for Gates was that he was thinking about joining Newsmax. Things move fast, and if you don't slow down every once in a while, anyway.
Things aren't
final thought on this.
Those things aren't separate. Next aspect. I would say that those things aren't necessarily separate. Like it seems like if you had this kind of scandal brewing and it did not bode well for your electoral chances, then you would try to find an out quickly and definitely get something else out there in advance of this story that would either kind of cover for it, distract from it, or say basically people are going after him because they want to ruin his chances of doing anything in the future.
Yeah, good point. Okay, let's turn to some other aspects on this. Now that you know what Matt Gaetz is being investigated for, I just want to add a little bit of context. And the context is in some cases substantive, in some cases not. It just adds up to Matt Gaetz really does seem to be doing a lot of stuff that hurts his image when these charges start to be talked about, when the investigation is out there. Little things like even recently, less than a week ago, when Elon Musk tweeted that if there's ever a scandal about me, please call it Elongate. And Matt Gaetz responded, deal, I want Gatesgate. It's like a week before the gate. And by the way, there's different teams on this. Gatesgate is one team. Personally, I'm for Pizza Gates. But I don't know, you can decide for yourself. But that's out there. Little bits from his past, like journalist Matt Fuller, who had tweeted in 2019 that he could confirm Matt Gaetz was dating a college student while he was a member of Congress. Now, I don't know what age that college student was, presumably not 17, but I don't know. It starts to push you in the direction of thinking maybe it's not impossible that he'd be interested in a 17-year-old. There's a little funny stuff like this, Brett, in response to a tweet from Bebe Rexha. There's no age that you can't be sexy. He had retweeted, I say we change Florida's welcome signs to this. Just funny. I think she's talking about being older and still being sexy, but it's still funny. Brett, they say that there's a tweet for everything. There's always a tweet. Why is there always a tweet? Why can't people just keep some of their issues to themselves?
It's crazy because this is what's crazy about it is that QAnon folks will go so deep into like the capitalization patterns and basically the equivalent of like numerology to find out how long words are and how many spaces there are, trying to find the hidden code in everything that exposes the truth of a secret cabal of satanic pedophile. And there these jagoffs are putting it right in your faces. You don't need, like you can put on your 3D glasses. It won't change the fact that it's plain as day in front of you that this guy is a super big creepo. And they try to get away with
it. Creepo, we don't know yet, but definitely a creepo.
And what's so weird about it is, sorry, people are yelling outside. That's it. What's so weird about it is that the Republicans will go after people who like make an artistic music video that shows Satan, right? Mm-hmm. They'll go after you because you're using imagery to make a point. But if you're out there saying, no, Alan Dershowitz, there shouldn't be an age of consent. Matt Gaetz, there's no age where it's too young for me to say you're a hottie patati with a banging body, spring break, South Padre 2021. Like, come on, man, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I think he was talking about people being older, but some things just line up sometimes. Like someone sent to me, Daybook has an internship posting for the office of Congressman Matt Gaetz. That was posted today. I'm assuming it was set up in advance, but I don't know. When like the big story about him is the 17-year-old sex trafficking, I'd wait, maybe. Is it paid? I don't know. That seems like an important detail. If you make your whole image being this sort of aggressive, abrasive jerk who gets into weird, like he's so try hard that's like you alluded to the Tiffany Trump thing. Like he like opts into these weird things. And you know, we haven't really talked about on the show really at all the whole Nestor thing, because you know, I don't want to get into anyone's family, but there's just a lot of weird stuff about him. Again, none of this, any more than his face, necessarily means that he committed crimes. We will see what happens in this investigation that began under the Trump administration. But in the court of public opinion, it doesn't put him on initial really firm footing, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, let's get to an even weirder thing. So the night of the revelation that Congressman Matt Gaetz was being investigated for possible criminal sex trafficking, he was on Tucker Carlson's show. And Tucker Carlson loves a good scandal when it's a Democrat. When it's a Republican, slightly different. And you can immediately tell how different it is from the way he introduces Matt Gaetz, as you'll see.
Years ago, late this afternoon, ran a story saying that Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is under federal investigation for playing some role in sex trafficking and potentially having a relationship with a 17-year-old girl. There are very few details in major news outlets tonight about this story. We have no background on it all, and not even any very informed questions. Instead, we've invited Congressman Gaetz on the show to respond to these stories and give us his view of them. Congressman, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how he treats all of these scandals involving politicians. I don't have any details. I haven't even really prepared questions because I care so little about this. I figured I would just turn it over to him and let him say whatever he wants. Brett, that seems like a consistent way that he's approached. I think that was how we treated the Swalwell thing, by the way.
That's the thing. This is one of his two modes. One is the one that you're implying he has, which is like, I am prepared. But he frequently, Tucker's move is to do this, is to be like, there's no conceivable way for me to do journalistic investigations. I don't have anybody. I don't know any journalists here at Fox News. but they won't even let us ask the question. And he thinks the questions are all of journalism. It's surprising to me that he has people that he interviews because he seems to be so allergic to answers. Mm-hmm. Like his whole show, half the show is him just asking questions. I don't even know. Is it possible? They didn't want you to ask a question. What is a laptop? What is a Hunter? What is a Biden? Go do the investigation, yeah, buddy. But that's what's great about this. And what we'll find out through the course of this interview is that Tucker Carlson thinks that Matt Gaetz would also be good at the nonsense messaging. He thinks that only a total moronic idiot would come on Tucker Carlson tonight and not be prepared with sane things to say, at least in the context of getting through to the people who watch that show. But as we'll discover, Tucker Carlson is blown away by how straight up stupid, entitled. And if this was, you know, we're in the NCAA tournament right now, it's like he didn't show up to play today.
Yeah, but he did show up. And so here's what we've got. Here's the beginning of Gaetz's explanation. Now, I want you to pay attention to a couple of things here. Pay attention to what he says he didn't do and what he doesn't address at all in this video.
It's a horrible allegation and it is a lie. The New York Times is running a story that I have traveled with a 17-year-old woman, and that is verifiably false. People can look at my travel records and see that that is not the case. What is happening is an extortion of me and my family involving a former Department of Justice official. On March 16th, my father got a text message demanding a meeting wherein a person demanded $25 million in exchange for making horrible sex trafficking allegations against me go away. Our family was so troubled by that, we went to the local FBI. And the FBI and the Department of Justice were so concerned about this attempted extortion of a member of Congress that they asked my dad to wear a wire, which he did with the former Department of Justice official. Tonight, I am demanding that the Department of Justice and the FBI release the audio recordings that were made under their supervision and at their direction, which will prove my innocence and that will show that these allegations aren't true. They're merely intended to try to bleed my family out of money.
Okay. His family was incredibly rich. Look into that story. It's fun and dirty and all that. But okay, so Brett, he says, I did not travel with any woman. That's not, I mean, I guess that's where the crime really comes in, but that's not all of the public's concern necessarily in the story. He didn't say he didn't do anything else. So we'll get to the extortion thing, but first of all, what do you think about that?
It's illegal to travel with someone who's under 18. But if you fly them out when you're already on the campaign trail, I mean, I wasn't traveling with her. Like if we go to dinner, if we go to a motel and do the nasty, it's a get out of jail free card if I didn't pick her up and take her there. Like that's what it sounds like to me. Mm-hmm. The other thing is like, this is an extortion just intended to take money from my family. You almost hear him at the end, you know, want to break into, and I need that money. I want it. It's mine. My daddy worked so hard so I could have all the money for hair volumizers.
Yes. So look, that's what he wanted to make it about, the possible extortion, which by the way, again, even though I don't know why we give all of these disclaimers, because everyone on the right is always going to pretend that we're rushing to judgment, even though how many times have I said that we have no idea if he did or not. But anyway, I'll say it again. We don't know. And look, if there is someone in the DOJ trying to extort him, that's really bad. Now, you can extort someone about something, something that someone did that was illegal. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't do it. But we should definitely know about that. And look, the fact that it was begun under Trump doesn't mean that someone in the DOJ couldn't be trying to extort him. That's totally possible. And again, wouldn't prove that he didn't actually do it. But so that's sort of a weird thing to make it about, but it gets weirder. Matt Gaetz decides in his Tucker Carlson interview last night to weirdly bring Tucker Carlson into it in a way that I don't think Tucker Carlson knew was going to happen, and he certainly wasn't happy about. Let's watch.
I'm not the only person on screen right now who's been falsely accused of a terrible sex act. You were accused of something that you did not do. And so you know what this feels like. You know the pain it can bring to your family. And you know how it just puts people on defense when you're accused of something so salacious and awful.
Yeah, you know what else puts people on defense? When their guest alleges that they did this thing or were falsely accused. I'm not, Brett. Don't ever pull that on the damage report.
I am not the only person on the screen right now. And you know that feeling you have, John?
Like fear about, I'm starting to finish the sentence in my head.
I know, I'm thinking of a lot of stuff too, but I'm not going to share it because what you did to those kittens, John, I haven't done. I'm not the only person who's been accused of picking up kittens by their tails and throwing them.
It's not throwing, juggling, it's swinging, John. And releasing. Throwing's illegal, swinging and releasing is not. Anyway, yeah, no, Tucker Carlson's not happy about that.
That's what Tucker's done. Tucker's like, all right, we're equivocating about like who traveled with whom. On the same plane, like I'm used to that. That's my wheelhouse. Like very carefully worded defenses and then distractions.
Yeah,
but you brought up people accusing me of doing terrible, horrible, no good, very bad things. I'm done with you, bud. And it doesn't get better from there. And I just want to bring back the fact that he did that earlier when we played that video. I had pointed this out yesterday. Matt Gaetz tells people that his dad wears a wire.
That is pretty funny. But anyway, so credit to Matt Gaetz though for finally making Tucker Carlson's blank expression context appropriate, because he was trying to keep it together. Wait, what is he doing? Now it's only fair for us to give Tucker Carlson a chance to respond to that. So here is his response to what Matt Gaetz just insanely said there.
You just referred to a mentally ill viewer who accused me of a sex crime 20 years ago. And of course, it was not true. I'd never met the person. But I do agree with you that being accused falsely is one of the worst things that can happen, and you do see it a lot.
Yeah, and it's even worse when you're reminded of it live on TV. So look, I honestly don't even know the details of that particular allegation that Tucker Carlson was making it about. I don't know for sure if that's actually what Matt Gaetz was talking about, because I am old enough to remember that Tucker was accused of sexual harassment last year by a recurring guest of Fox News that alleged that multiple hosts, including Tucker Carlson, had sexually harassed her. This is Kathy Aru. You can see interviews with her giving the details. That was not 20 years ago. It was not a mentally ill person that had never met him. It was a woman who was repeatedly on his show and said that he sexually harassed her.
Also,
he didn't want to make it about that, interestingly.
Also, there's a difference between a mentally ill viewer or any random viewer saying, I had sex with Tucker Carlson, and a Bill Barr sanctioned investigation originating in a friendly administration's Department of Justice, continuing an investigation into whether you did this.
Yeah. Well, look, the Matt Gaetz Tucker Carlson interview just keeps on giving. So he's going to give a little bit more detail, Matt Gaetz will, about some of what they got up to together, Matt Gaetz and Tucker Carlson. Didn't know that they were these kinds of buddies, but anyway, let's take a look.
Again, I only know what I've read in the New York Times. I can say that actually you and I went to dinner about 2 years ago. Your wife was there and I brought a friend of mine, you'll remember her. And she was actually threatened by the FBI, told that if she wouldn't cop to the fact that somehow I was involved in some pay for play scheme, that she could face trouble. And so I do believe that there are people at the Department of Justice who are trying to smear me, you know, providing for flights and hotel rooms for people that you're dating who are of legal age is not a crime.
Well, yes, what you just defined would not be a crime, but if they're not legal age, then that would actually be a crime. And I understand some people get confused about this because they say, well, they're saying that she's 17, and note that they're all like, this is a 17-year-old woman. They're really focusing on the woman part. 17, yes, that is the age of consent in some states. And that is why, in theory, he might not be in trouble for breaking state laws, but for sex trafficking, that is not the case. And so he's trying to define himself out of suspicion. All he's doing is defining what not breaking a crime looks like. What we need to find out is whether you qualify for that, and that we don't know.
Yeah, that makes total
sense. But it's weird to make it about a dinner with Tucker Carlson. And Tucker, his face went from blank to like, oh, what is it? He doesn't like it.
You're just like, if there were across the same table doing this interview in a pre-COVID world, Tucker would just be kicking him under it. Like, shut
Stop it.
Up. What are you Stop doing? It. And that's like me going, John, remember, you know, before I was married, I brought a lot of random women. We had dinner with some that you remember. I don't remember her name, but she was there. And we hung out together. So Tucker, not only did I just bring up some disproven allegation that I'm not going to be too specific about, and you can kind of change it to define which allegation of sexual misconduct against you think is most easily dismissible, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's one thing. The other is, hey, Tucker, you know how we all were hanging out with the person in question at dinner? There's like
making him a witness,
and that which is, and these things are kind of annoying when mainstream media does them, but it's Matt Gaetz and we've already done all the disclaimers, like allegedly investigation. But like, there's all these big CNN's like, hey, do we got any legal experts who could say that Tucker's now a witness? And there's like 10 of them are like, gotcha, he is.
That's a weird legal strategy. Matt Gaetz likes, you know, I guess he was born into the easiest possible situation, so now he's going for challenge mode in his legal defense.
And anyway, to get out of legal trouble, like another thing we need to underscore, his dad has gotten him out of legal trouble in the past. So it's not just that he's never encountered an obstacle before. It's that when he does, people just remove them for him after he, you know, shotguns 10 beers and runs head first into those hurdles.
Now, let's put a cap on the interview though. After he finally, for him blessedly, gets rid of Matt Gaetz, here is what Tucker Carlson had to say.
If you just saw our Matt Gaetz interview, that was one of the weirdest interviews I've ever conducted. That story just appeared in the news a couple of hours ago. And on the certainty that there's always more than you read in the newspaper, we immediately called Matt Gaetz and asked him to come on and tell us more, which as you saw, he did.
So like, you had him on to defend himself, like you want those things to go away. Is that what happened? Did that Did that help Matt Gaetz? Did it help Tucker Carlson? So, he doesn't like that he's involved in it, but he's like trying to. That's a weird, like that's the most honest I think he's been, just in terms of facial expression and body language. He was deeply uncomfortable. I wonder what he really thinks about that experience.
It's amazing. And it's difficult to lose Tucker unless you're like a Republican business person during one of the like every third Wednesday when Tucker decides to become a populist. Like that's the only Republican figures, traditionally Republican figures that Tucker will back away from, right? He had someone on recently where he's like, thank you so much for telling us how fascism's the way forward in America. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really glad that after you said fascism, I'm glad you came here to share that perspective. And and after that, and the dozens of other Tucker interviews where he's like, thank you, crazy. Thank you for that.
Exactly.
This was so nuts that afterwards Tucker's like, do we have 20 seconds for me to legally and rhetorically distance myself from Wackadoodle Boy that just came in? Cool. All right, I'm going to do that. Let's bump the Hunter Biden laptop story by about 15.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, look, we got one last little bit on this, and this is the update as of this morning. Like, we've been able to distance ourselves a bit from that interview. So, as of this morning, what does Republican leadership think about Matt Gaetz, the allegations that have been made against him? Well, Kevin McCarthy was on Fox and he was asked about this. Watch.
Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, and you've been very vocal that Congressman Eric Swalwell should be stripped of his ability to serve on the Intel Committee because of a reported relationship with a Chinese spy. He serves on the National Security Committee. You say that's a national security threat on the Intel Committee. So by that same logic, will you take any action to remove Matt Gaetz from the Judiciary Committee while he's under investigation by the DOJ over whether he had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old and paid for her to travel with him? That's something he denies, but that would be a violation of federal sex trafficking laws.
Look, I haven't heard from DOJ. I haven't been able to talk to Matt Gaetz yet. I just read the story. Those are serious implications. If it comes out to be true, yes, we would remove him if that was the case. But right now, as Matt Gaetz says, this is not true and we don't have any information. So let's get all the information. We did have the FBI come to us and tell us about Eric Swalwell.
Yeah, and then he goes on to try to make it about Eric Swalwell and all that. So look, them saying we'll do X does not mean they'll do X, but they're at least saying it. That's more than I think we generally can expect when one of their own is accused of something.
They've lowered everyone's expectations so far. So totally. What he just said is like, listen, if these things are true, I'm going to reserve judgment, but if they're found unequivocally to be true, I am going to back away from this guy, right? Well, obviously, unequivocally. He's going to test the hell out of whether he can equivocate about that every single step of the way. And know that in his heart of hearts, he does not like Matt Gaetz. There's no way he likes Matt Gaetz. He hates Matt Gaetz. He hates Donald Trump. He hates everyone that's made him bend over even anywhere remotely close to backwards at the beginning. And since that he's had to start doing that, he's twisted himself into a pretzel. He hates Matt Gaetz, but he will say like unequivocally, if it turns out, I'm going to reserve judgment on this. But if judgment is passed down unequivocally, I'm coming down on that side. Now let's get back to speculating about Eric Swalwell. Like, I don't care.
I'd really prefer to do that.
Well, personally, I don't. Right. So there's his double standard and hypocrisy. So his on the merits, his argument's stupid. And then obviously his hypocrisy is exposed in the same breath. Like, I don't care about Eric Swalwell. Sometimes he's good on Twitter. Like, that's, I don't care. And by all accounts, Eric Swalwell was like, oh, this person, FBI, I'll tell you about it. And then the FBI went and told people about it. That's how the FBI came to you, Kevin, because Swalwell told him about it by the accounts that I've read. But so he doesn't care. He's not an honest actor and never has been.
No, but what he was asked about one other aspect of this, and this is one of the weirdest bit of context that we mentioned before, which was that Gaetz had been the sole vote against a human trafficking bill. Here's that.
Idea why Congressman Gaetz was the only Republican to vote against the federal government in terms of the trafficking money, the funds?
For human trafficking? No, I have no idea whatsoever why he would vote against it.
That's not a defense. I mean, that might go to Brett's point there. But I want to make very clear, because a lot of people are mentioning this. I want to make sure that everyone understands. This was a bill that was sponsored by both of the Republican senators of Matt Gaetz' state. And when we say that he was the only no vote, it's not just in his party and it's not just in the House. He was the only vote in the entirety of Congress against it. Everyone else voted for it. Every right. single Republican in the House, every single Republican in the Senate. And he was against the human trafficking bill,
including Rand Paul. So it's not like someone mm-hmm. who always votes against any spending of any dollars.
Yeah.
Voted no based on that. Like, cover blown, bud, cover blown.
It's a weird one. He says, my constituents didn't send me here to create more government.
So, that's, I mean,
this is a weird one, man. And why are the Q people like you're right. The Q people had figured out from the call sign of the ship stuck in the Suez Canal that it was loaded up with babies for Hillary Clinton. But they can't look deep enough into why this one guy was the only person to vote against the human trafficking bill.
So weird.
If Hillary Clinton had voted against the human trafficking bill, I think they would have taken notice. I'm gonna say that. I know it's bold. I'm gonna say it.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. That's all for Matt Gaetz for today. We'll see what damage he does tomorrow. Because the thing is, we're almost certainly not gonna have updates on the investigation this week, but he might go on Sean Hannity or something. Governor Ron DeSantis is one of a number of Republicans who've been coming out against vaccine passports, or basically requiring vaccinations for anything to try to limit the spread of COVID. That is consistent with the way he's approached this pandemic from the very beginning. And it is resulting in a fun little event that's gonna be coming to Florida soon. It's billed as the Million Maskless March and Mask Burning. And its organizers say that April 10 marks 1 year of mask tyranny in Broward County. And we will mark that date with a celebration of freedom. It will feature recognition and prizes for those who have faithfully endured this last year. The mask burning is in full cooperation with local law enforcement and will be done in a safe and controlled manner. So that's good to know. You never know if this is gonna be one of the right wing events where it's done in conjunction with law enforcement, or they'll be trying to beat the cops to death. You never know which way this is gonna go. Hopefully this is the former. Second, though, that they've faithfully endured this last year. Look, we've all endured this last year. Arguably, they've endured it the least because they haven't been being responsible. We have been the ones who've been limiting ourselves, wearing the mask, trying to be safe and responsible. They've been flouting it and shouting in the face of people working the cash register at Publix. That's not enduring, that's delighting. But they're gonna have this little mask burning, Brett. And by the way, what do you think? I got more, but what do you think?
I mean, I think exactly what you would expect someone to think, which is like, for me, my conclusion on mask wearing is it makes sense. I know in places where they have high population density that aren't in America, people wear masks anyway for those reasons and pollution. Like, yeah. It's not a crazy thing everywhere in the world to cover your face. People here think it's like this infringement of their fundamental rights when it's not. Everyone looks around and it makes sense. And this isn't one of those things that's like, you know, I get real cynical about government overreach, but this doesn't feel like it. I would tell you if I thought it was.
Exactly. So I want to give you a little bit more from the event description. They say signs are very important. Signs with 3 to 6 big bold words are the best. Masks are slavery. No more masks. Masks off children. No vaccine passports are good examples. Broward County government is pushing the experimental vaccine hard. So signs against forced vaccinations are also encouraged. So of course you want to get out in front of that. I mean, there are no forced vaccinations, but you should totally make that what your signs are about. And isn't it shocking that the people that think that masks are slavery, what do you know? They also don't think that we should get the vaccine. So don't do the thing that would protect you from it until we develop the vaccine that you probably really want Trump to get credit for, but now don't want to actually take. And you want to encourage other people to not take it. So that's gonna be a fun event. Surely not gonna lead to more COVID. Definitely not.
I just wanna say, when they say masks are slavery, My gut is those are two different things. Like, that's one thing I definitely can't go with them on, is that masks are slavery. But just to be safe, if they're taking volunteers to participate in an experiential proof that masks are indeed slavery, those very same people can be my slave for a while if they want to. So for a week, they wear masks. And for another week, they are slaves. And we'll see if they feel that those two experiences are the same. Afterwards, we'll compare and contrast, see how they like it.
Look, I respect your wielding of satire. For me, it's just enough to say, man, what a terrible person to compare like this. I'm a slave now. I've experienced the worst a human life could ever be forced to be, with the threat of violence and families being separated and rape and murder. This is as bad. Why have they done this to me? Imagine, like, when you're holding that sign, it, like, do you not get that? Are we the baddies? Do you think you're the hero of this story? When you're saying, this is as bad as all the Harriet Tubman stuff I saw.
And but they do still think money. Get her off the money.
That's, they're also probably not big fans of Harriet Tubman.
My money. That's what I love.
And by the way, can I just note, I don't, this is one of those things, one of the things I find very fascinating are things that you can't prove, but you know to be true, that every one of these people that are asserting that masks are slavery has at least once in their life said, slaves didn't have that bad. Guarantee they think that slavery wasn't as bad as the libs want you to think it was.
Civil War was about economics.
Yeah.
It was about economics. Anyone who says it's slavery, it was about economics. What economics? American economics.
They got anyways, you.
I would say that Britney Spears had a more cogent slavery argument in the song I'm a Slave for You.
Than their mask thing?
Than their masks are slavery call.
Yeah. Hashtag free Britney.
Definitely. I love it. And I'm fine with them burning masks. I don't care. Burn an American flag, they'll murder you. But, and they don't realize that my defense of their flag burning protest is a pure version of First Amendment respect. Their mask burning protest than anything. They won't say, they'll say I'm canceling them for saying, it's fine if you all get out there and burn masks and probably wear a mask so you don't cough from the smoke inhalation.
The smoke of the masks. But, yeah, I can totally imagine a Borat sketch where he goes down there, he's got the thing with the flames, and he's like, let's burn them. So they're throwing them in, then he starts handing out American flag masks. And they're suddenly in a very tough situation. What do I do?
I love it. That's the best way to do it.
Okay, Brett, thank you so much for stepping in. Really do appreciate you being on the show. We'll see what ends up happening with Friday. See what happens. But until then, Brett, thank you. What can we expect out of the TYT network for the rest of today?
The rest of today, The Young Turks airs at 3 p.m. So first of all, the one that you mentioned, the interview with Dr. Rashad Ritchie and the state representative who was arrested in Georgia, that is on The Conversation, which airs at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. And then, or about that time, just check. Basically, everyone should get notified.
5:30 p.m. Eastern time, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time on tyt.com/live and also Twitch. Representative Park Cannon will be joining Rashad Ritchie.
And then also the other thing is The Young Turks will feature John Iadarola for the first hour, Anando Vila, and alongside Anna Kasparian for hour two and post game. So everyone check that out. And you're really going to love it. You're really, really going to love it. That and then, Wednesday, my wife from the other, I'm like, what is on Wednesdays on Twitch? What is on Wednesday?
That's what I was pausing for.
My show. I was like, what is it? Because I know Jordan Yule's on Thursday.
Yes.
We got a new show coming out that we're not talking about. That's going to be really fun. Monday is Rashad Ritchie's show and Big Rick. Yes. Oh, my show, Happy Half Hour. Wednesdays, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, twitch.tv/TYT. I'll be drinking. But also talking about happy and ridiculous news.
Awesome. That'll be fun. Okay, Brett, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Things have certainly been developing fast at the border, both in terms of the seasonal increase of migrant traffic, as well as quite a bit of Senate oversight, I suppose, if you can call Ted Cruz poking around in some bushes at the Rio Grande oversight. And so we have a lot of an idea of what people want you to think is happening there. And there's also the actual situation. So I want to understand what the real situation is and what could potentially be done. And so we decided, you know what, we're going to bring in an expert. And so we're very lucky to be joined once again on the program by the president and CEO of the National Immigration Forum, as well as the host of the Only in America podcast, Ali Narani. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back.
Always glad to talk to you. And so you've been watching what's been going on. And you know, there's a lot of dueling narratives, as I implied. What is your sense of what's happening, how serious it is, and where we might go from here?
Well, we do have a humanitarian crisis at the border. Let's be honest about that situation that we're all facing, that the country is facing, but more importantly, that these children and families are facing. So what do we do about it? I mean, number one, I think the Biden administration needs to set up the infrastructure. Number two, the logistics, and number three, the processes so that kids can enter the country, ask for asylum, and be in a safe and humane environment. But when you get back to what's happening in Mexico and Central America, you know, the situation continues to deteriorate in terms of the violence, the corruption, the poverty, that really is ultimately, those are the factors that are pushing parents to make this terribly difficult decision to send their children to safety on their own.
You know, I'm curious about, you talked about setting up the infrastructure. And certainly that has been a thing that we here at the Damage Report have been calling for. Like, we go into this assuming that there is probably not the same sort of government policy designed to produce humanitarian suffering as sort of a warning to other countries not to come here, that that's not what Biden's interested in. And yet, you know, I think the Daily Beast was showing photos of something like 500 kids all crammed in small areas. And at the same time, the initial attempt to describe this as some sort of surge, and Representative AOC has had a great response to that, is not actually the case, that this is not a response to Biden policy. It's sort of it's a seasonal effect. So my question then would be, if this is a natural pattern that we see pretty much every year, why is the Biden administration so seemingly surprised by the numbers and caught off guard in terms of having the infrastructure in place? Why are we only now scrambling to set that up?
You know, so there's a couple of things in play here. One is, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that the Trump administration, they really hollowed out the immigration systems at the border and really across the country. There was a lack of staff, infrastructure in place. And remember, the transition period was really a January 6th insurrection in the Capitol. So there was just very little kind of visibility into what the Trump administration had in place. But second, and when you look at the numbers closely and you kind of begin to understand where children are coming from, there was an unanticipated increase in number of folks because there weren't all necessarily all starting from Central America, right? So you, and what my point here is that back in March of last year, the Trump administration closed the border because of Title 42. What that meant is that nobody could enter, and if they did enter, they'd in essence be spun around and sent back to Mexico. So you had this pent up demand at the Mexico side of the border where families are stuck, children are stuck. And so what we're seeing now in the news reports is the fact that many families and parents are making this decision to send children on their own across the border. So I believe that that is also contributing to the uptick in numbers, because you just had this pent up demand for safety at the Mexico side of the border that then is leading the administration to say, whoa, you know, we thought that people would be coming actually from Central America. We'd have a little bit more kind of planning time, if you will.
Okay. And I know that you've recently talked about, you tweeted about the role that the cartels are playing in this crisis. You've identified quite a bit already in this interview, influences on it. What effect are the cartels having?
Well, I really think this is one of the least reported and probably least understood factors in this entire issue. So if you are, so in 2019, I did a couple of trips to Honduras, and I, you know, sat down with families who lived in San Pedro Sula or Tegucigalpa or even the Coffee Highlands. If you are a taxi driver in San Pedro Sula, you're paying rent to the local gang so that you can live your life, stay alive, quite frankly. So let's say you don't pay that rent. That gang is then going to kill you and or your children. So then you have to pay another part of kind of organized crime, a smuggler, to get you from San Pedro Sula to the US-Mexico border. And then once you get to the US-Mexico border, who's going to actually get you across the river? It's going to be the cartels who are controlling the crossings. So if you are a Central American just trying to make a go of it, you're paying a gang at home, you're paying a gang to escape a gang, and then you're paying a gang to try to ask for asylum in the US. And that is a situation that I think we have to do a better job of understanding, and that Mexico, Central America, and the US have to do a better job of really disrupting these criminal networks.
Wow. You know, you gave a hint of some of what you'd like to see done over the next few months in response to what we're seeing right now. Do you think that much of what the Biden administration is going to try to accomplish is going to come in the form of just executive action, or are we looking at needing an immigration bill? And if that does happen, this is a situation that the Republicans have been talking a lot about recently. Is that something that you think there's a chance that the Republicans might negotiate in good faith with the Biden administration to deal with what we're seeing right now?
Well, most of what the Biden administration can do in the short term at the border, they can do with existing authority. They just need to be able to redeploy the resources so that the right personnel and infrastructure are in place to execute logistics. It remains to be seen if they're going to need additional dollars from Congress. On the other hand, so that aside, you have Senators Cornyn, Republican from Texas, and Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona. There's been a lot of chatter about them working together on a border enforcement bill that could be coming out after this Easter recess. We're very interested in seeing a kind of the context of that or the content of that bill, because they sent a letter to the administration a couple of weeks ago that, yes, was enforcement heavy, but to be totally honest with you, it was not as bad as we expected. So we could see a bipartisan border enforcement, but then you've got the DREAM Act and agriculture and another separate piece of legislation to address the agricultural sector also in the mix. So we could be in for an interesting summer and spring in terms of Congress trying to reach a compromise.
Okay. And here in the United States, we're seeing every day the number of vaccinations is going up, the rate of vaccination is going up. But I know that your organization has tweeted about the gap between the rising rates that we see of citizens and the rates for immigrants. How bad is that gap, and do you see it being solved anytime soon?
Well, you've got places like, you know, Texas that just overall are not really leaning into the vaccination effort, if you will. But then you also have places like California, which have really deployed some innovative strategies to reach farm workers across the state to make sure that they have access to vaccines. So the challenge here is that a lot of your vaccine access and education is so localized that it really depends on local leadership to put in place the resources necessary to reach the community. What we're seeing in the research, and also obviously in practice, is that it's those homemade videos on Instagram or YouTube that is, you know, the immigrant small business owner, the immigrant doctor encouraging their community of friends, family, relationships to get their vaccine. So ultimately, we're going to see very community-based solutions being most successful in terms of making sure that everybody has access to the vaccine.
Hopefully, and hopefully soon, because we are starting to see a little bit of a worrying trend in where the numbers are going. So hopefully there will be a lot of effort on that soon. As always, appreciate you joining us and breaking this down. I know the situation is tense right now, probably going to develop quite a bit in the near future. So hopefully we can touch base again in not too long.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.